List for living number one. Move to the countryside.
Welcome. Come on in. Come on in. Well, I've got the keys and it needs a bit of work. It needs lots of work. It's a bit of a mess. But I found it. This will be my new home in the English countryside. This is something I've always wanted to do, and that's why it's at the top of my bucket list.
I have to admit, though, I don't like the term bucket list. I prefer to call it my list for living, because essentially it's the same thing. People describe it as a bucket list because it's a list of the things that you want to do before you kick the bucket. In other words, before you die. I'm Helen Fawkes, and I'm a correspondent here at the BBC. This isn't the first list I've made. 12 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. In the middle of my treatment, when I was really unwell, I wrote down 10 things on the back of an envelope and promised myself that if I survived, I would go out and do them. Within weeks of finishing treatment, I was in Moscow, pursuing my dream of being a BBC foreign correspondent. Inspired by my list, I ended up reporting from Ukraine, Kosovo and Serbia, plus many other places, including a war zone.
Just over here, there's an armoured personnel carrier. Earlier on today, we had a prisoner exchange take place right here.
Finally, a verdict Georgians for the former Serbian president after a two-year trial.
The trial chamber finds you, Milan Milutinovic.
Bosnia's first ever gay festival received a hostile reception.
We can't show you the actual opening of the event because the media has been banned from the ceremony.
Helen Fawkes, BBC News, Sarajevo.
I pretty much did everything I set out to do, and so I came home. Not long after, though, the cancer returned. At Christmas last year, I was told that it was incurable. It was one of the worst moments of my life. It was hard to take in. It felt like it was just incredibly unfair. I was upset and angry, but also determined that I should make the most of the time that I had left. I resolved to write another list, and this time it has 50 things on it. And because I wanted to focus on being alive rather than dying, I called it my list for living.
Here we go.
That's me ticking off one of the items. My bucket list includes places to visit and things to explore with the people who mean the most to me. But more of that in a moment. I wanted to do this programme to explore why we make bucket lists. How can the prospect of dying help us to live life to the full? What happens if the subject is taboo? Is the bucket list a selfish act, or can it be a spiritual response? And is it good for you to make this kind of list? I've been speaking to psychotherapist Philippa Perry about how I've been spending the limited time that I have left.
I pulled a pint in my local pub.
Yeah.
I went to Paris for lunch with a group of friends. I wanted to be driven very fast around a racetrack.
Yeah.
So my friend arranged for David Coulthard to drive me very fast in a Porsche around Silverstone.
Yeah.
So I've done a few of them already.
How long have you got?
I think it's going to be years. Because I've gone past the six-month point, and I do feel well, but I have been told that the cancer will keep coming back, and eventually it will win, and I will die from it.
Yeah. And this list, does it keep you excited about life?
Yeah, it does, because when you're going through all this cancer treatment, so for the last more than a year and a half, all I've done is either been in hospital, having surgery, having chemotherapy, or recovering from chemotherapy.
Which is grim.
It's really hard. And it makes you really tired, which makes everything seem a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
So this list has become more than I expected it to. It's really good things to plan. And I think you lose a lot of structure in your life as well when you don't know what's happening, when you're having treatment, when you're going to be well. So it's having things to look forward to.
So really, it gives you a scaffold, a sort of structure to all the unknowns you're facing.
Yeah. And also, it's an excuse to spend time with friends and family. It prioritises sort of special moments, rather than saying, yes, we must go and do this. It's, no, we have to go and do it.
And we have to do it now.
Yeah.
Number 36.
When I drive, I don't drive too fast, so however fast you'll drive, it will be fantastic. Oh, my God!
Drive fast in a sports car.
Now we can start to lean on the car a little bit. Yes, overtake him.
Not long before, I was told that I had advanced ovarian cancer. I read a book which had a profound effect on me. It was written in Australia by palliative care nurse Bronnie Ware. Bronnie worked with people diagnosed with terminal illness in their last few weeks.
Dying people want to live for as long as they can, and even though it's a really sad terrifying situation for families, the actual dying people want to enjoy every moment.
Bronnie listened to her patients' fears and how they were preparing for death. Her book is called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying, A Life Transformed by the Dearly Departing. And in it, she tells some of their stories.
I guess one of my favourite clients was Grace, and she was a lady who had spent her life in a very unhappy, dominating marriage. And she'd always hoped to travel, and her husband went into a nursing home because he was ill. And as it turned out, she became terminally ill within a few weeks of getting her freedom that she'd waited 50 or 60 years for. So she actually never got to live any of those dreams, and she insisted on me promising her that I would live a life true to myself in honour of her, which is not a hard thing to do because I saw how much pain and anguish she actually went through.
Unlike Grace and the dying people that Bronnie worked with, I feel that I have the luxury of a small amount of time to make sure that I die without regrets. It's interesting that it seems to take encounters with death for us to consider how we want to live. Susan Spencer-Wendell is a mother of three children and a successful journalist. Susan was 44 when she was diagnosed with ALS, or motor neuron disease, an incurable condition that destroys the nerves that power the muscles. She tapped out most of her book, Until I Say Goodbye, My Year of Living with Joy, on her iPhone, using just her right thumb.
That spring, I began to do what I'd warned myself against. Instead of living the moment, I slipped into dreading the future with ALS. I thought of myself unable to walk and eat, unable to hug my children and tell them I love them. I would sink into paralysis, my body incapacitated, but my mind untouched. I would understand and experience every loss. Then die, with my children so young. I began to dwell in that future. And then it came to me, alone, seated on a barrier outside Burger King. Not a muzzy moment, but my life in focus, tack sharp. 44 years of perfect health. I had rarely even had a head cold or tooth cavity. I had known abiding love, traveled the world, married a great partner, worked a job I adored. I was alive. I had a year. Maybe more, but I knew I had one more year at least of good health. I determined right there in the Burger King parking lot to spend it wisely.
I spoke to Susan and her husband John from their home in Florida on the west coast of America.
Anything add to that?
Susan went to see the Northern Lights with her best friend, went wedding dress shopping in New York with her teenage daughter, and she visited Cyprus, the home of her birth father.
In the book, you talk about how previously, you know, you live life almost on autopilot. And I understand that. I felt that before my diagnosis, I was almost sleepwalking through life, having a good time, doing a good job, but not living life to the full, to the maximum potential. How much do you think, you know, we all should be a bit more conscious about the time that we have and how we spend it, regardless of our health?
Everybody. I think everybody should wake up. And really think about that. I have to say, I agree. I mean, I was sort of doing the same thing. I was on autopilot till all this happened. And it does make you take inventory
In New York, I promised myself we would do what came naturally. Marina would try on as many dresses as she wished, even if that was none. I would not have any expectations. I realized long ago when diagnosed that I can't force anything. Marina disappeared into the dressing room while I laid on advice I can't remember, for my heart was in that dressing room. The door opened. Marina appeared, a foot taller and a decade older. I could see the beautiful woman she will be one day. I simply stared. What do you do when you glimpse a moment you will not live to see?
I'm Helen Fawkes, and this is The Bucket List for the BBC World Service. So Susan's bucket list became a book. I've been blogging about mine. But there's also a much more public way that some people around the world have been declaring what things they'd like to do. It all started in New Orleans in the United States. Artist Candy Chang was struggling with grief and depression after the loss of a loved one. In her neighbourhood, she covered the wall of a derelict building with a blackboard and the phrase, "Before I die, I want to... dot, dot, dot." Passers-by filled in the blanks with chalk. And since then, there have been over 300 walls in more than 50 countries, from Kazakhstan to Argentina. Amos Young is a university student in Hong Kong who collaborated with friends to create their own wall in the heart of the city.
Well, the responses have been amazing. So the art project was in a very crowded and very busy area. So during the lunch and peak hours, a lot of people would pass by. And, you know, when people are in a rush, they walk really quickly. But sometimes I got a chance to sit on the bench and watch people go up to the board, and they would stop from their very quick-paced running and just take a pause and look at the wall to see what it was all about. People would try to squeeze in every little space just to write their personal thoughts onto the wall.
And what kind of things have people been writing?
All sorts. There's all types of people from different ages, different nationalities. Some funny ones were, while I'm living, I want to kiss a giraffe, living on chocolate for a day, teaching my kids how to be happy, owning my own yoga studio. Hong Kong is, you know, often portrayed as a financial hub or where people go for shopping, and it really builds an impression that Hong Kong is very material-focused or money-focused. And I think that living in a very thriving, busy and booming city, it can be very easy to be influenced by the wealth and the luxuries and simply treat it as a sign of success. But under all this facade, people want something that's more than that, not as superficial, but something that can be replaced with money, which is happiness.
Psychotherapist Philippa Perry.
I mean, my first reaction to the bucket list is to think of it in terms of a shopping list. It reminds me too much, I think, of a consumer society, a shopping list of holidays and sights and sensations. And I feel like it is too much buying into, I can buy my way out of feeling like I'm feeling. If you say, think of something that's on every bucket list, I don't know if it's on yours or not, of swimming with dolphins.
No, it's not.
But... oh, I'm pleased to hear that.
There is I want to go on a boat and see dolphins in the wild, which is kind of, yeah, it's almost
okay.
There, but...
hey, whatever, yeah. Have some fresh air.
Yeah.
But if they're not very interested in marine life or even mammals or even relationships, I just think it's not about being alive. It's about going through the motions of something. And it's about doing it because it's what people do rather than somebody asking themselves, what am I feeling? What do I want? It's not an I thing. It's almost as a look at me doing this rather than how do I feel doing this?
Reverend Richard Coles is the parish priest of St Mary's the Virgin in Northamptonshire in rural Middle England. He's often on hand to offer spiritual advice and counsel to those terminally ill.
Do you think that compiling a bucket list is a selfish thing to do?
No, I don't at all. I think you do what you've got to do. And I think anything which encourages you actually to think about what it is you want and who you are, the truth, the reality, the deep truths about yourself, is a good thing. And you might express that by climbing Machu Picchu, or you might express it by taking the QE2 across the Atlantic. Well, that's all fine and dandy. I suppose you could say in a sort of consumerist, individualist culture, then bucket lists will naturally appear. I've no problem with that at all. I think do what you've got to do. I think sometimes perhaps in fear of death, people might want to cram every available minute with incident, and sometimes you might think perhaps you need to just forego that roller coaster and just perhaps touch on something that's difficult for you to experience and think about. But I think you have to let people be who they are and perhaps help them when they're in a place that they can be helped.
Number 28. Zoom down a zip wire.
Okay, so sit yourself down for me.
You don't need to take photos right now? That's fine. Really. Look, I'm facing away from you, so you can't take any photos of me dangling.
The term bucket list originated from America and was made popular by a Hollywood movie starring Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman in 2007. Whilst the idea is spreading, different attitudes to death mean that my list would be a very unusual thing to write in other parts of the world. Amos Young again.
Well, I think people feel not happy when they have to think about death because it usually means the end of something or something that's not pleasant. So in Cantonese, we have the number four sounds very similar to death. So we don't use four in a lot of senses. Like, for example, in our license plates, we try not to use a four.
Tell me, if somebody was terminally ill in sort of Asian culture, would somebody write a similar list to the one I've written?
Well, I think people may not prefer to write a bucket list because it's sort of like planning for your day to come because you're building your way towards a certain event, which is sort of a bad fortune in Asian culture.
For me, though, confronting death is something that's very hard to avoid. I've been diagnosed with cancer several times now. In order to plan and enjoy the time I have left, I've had to accept what was happening and that I'm going to die sooner rather than later. I was surprised to reach this level of acceptance, but not everyone is the same, and some people have more essential priorities to deal with. I spoke to Dr. M.R. Rajagopal from Palliam, India, which is dedicated to providing end-of-life care in Kerala, in the southwest of India. I have incurable cancer, and I've written a bucket list of the things that I want to experience or achieve before I die. How familiar a concept is that to you and the kind of people that you help to treat?
Very few. The majority have very largely looming practical problems. The predominant concern is about the well-being of the family, the marriage of the daughter, about children's education, which may be questioned, about the cost of treatment destroying their home. I also have seen people saying that, okay, I know I am going to die, but I want to be well enough for 3 months so that I can finish off all the things that I want to do. I actually was with a young couple where a 27-year-old girl, a recently married girl, had ovarian cancer, decided before they start treatment to go for a vacation at Ooty, because she had always wanted this and the man wanted to make sure that she gets it before she has the treatment. So maybe things that may seem silly to some people are very important to some.
Number 45, go glass blowing.
What are you doing here?
We've got to make sure that the trails, visible trails, are melted properly to the surface.
I wonder about the impact that my bucket list is having and will have on those around me. I've got 50 items on my list, but I don't expect to complete them all. I hope that some of my family and friends might do that on my behalf. Reverend Richard Coles again. Where should your priority be? I mean, while in some respects, when you come to the end of your life, you do feel quite selfish. But at the same time, you're very aware of your loved ones, you know, feelings as well. You know, how would you sort of balance things?
Quite often on a deathbed, what you see is the person dying, in fact, putting themselves out to not inconvenience other people. I think if you're dying, you're probably allowed a pass, really. I think you can pick what you want to watch on telly. You can have what you want to eat. I think that's probably all right. I shall be immensely selfish on mine. It's going to be Indian takeaway every night for as long as I can manage it.
What impact does, you know, religion and spirituality have on the things that people say to you that they'd like to do?
I think sometimes religion, if it's done properly, allows a human flourishing, so we can live life fully. And I think people want to have that experience of life in its fullness. Now, that doesn't mean undiluted happiness or thrill-seeking. It means life in all its drama and colour and sometimes its awfulness. I think what religions do is they offer you a vision of something that preceded you, and that's something that will exist after you've gone and indeed transcends you in the present moment. And that, I think, can sometimes be very powerful for people at the last stages of their life.
It's easy when writing a bucket list to think of all sorts of incredible things that you could do. Bronnie Ware, the former nurse who worked with terminally ill people, says that we shouldn't forget the simple stuff.
Leave room for space. Don't have it so full that you're going to miss the other blessings along the way, because you'll probably find that the things you'll remember most fondly will be the special moments with people you love that weren't planned anyway. So have the bucket list, work towards it and enjoy them. You know, enjoy those moments where you've done things that perhaps you wouldn't have done had you not been diagnosed with terminal illness. But at the same time, just leave space for a little bit of surprise as well along the way.
Number two, live in my own house. To get this place ready, I have people helping me. At the moment, it's just a building with empty rooms and very bare walls. But I'm enjoying making this my own home. This has been my dream for many years. It's also something to focus on other than the cancer. Living with a killer disease is hard, but at the same time, I feel lucky. Unlike some of the patients we heard about, I don't have to worry about the practical side of getting treatment, so I'm able to do the things on my bucket list. I'm still well enough, I have the means, and I also have time on my side. What struck me from talking to Susan Spencer-Wendell, who wrote about her year of living with joy, is that by doing the things you've always wanted to, with the people who mean the most, you're getting the best possible outcome from the very worst of circumstances. It's about living in the moment and not dwelling on the future. As a result of this programme, I think that I'm going to change some of the items on my list. I'm not so bothered now about the big foreign adventures. I realise that it's often the smallest moments that are the most precious, and that what I want is a lot closer to home.
The Bucket List was presented by Helen Fawkes and produced by Rebecca Maxted. It's a Wise Buddha production for the BBC World Service.